Sunday. Bushwick Block Party, presented by Roberta, Death Killers of Bushwick, Bushwick Music Studio, Heritage Radio Network, Planet of the Faith, Green Fitness Studio, and New York Loft Hostel, featuring awesome food from Roberta, Jen and the Outlaw Fish Fry Truck, BMX Grind Box, Dodgeball, Bikini Cake Stand Contest, Psychedelic T-Shirt Auction, Photo Booth by Mary Meyer, music by Team Rook Pierre, Electric Tickle Machine, Sweet Bowl, Shark, Phone Tag, Hunter, Get Real, Knife Show, Block Party, Moore Street between Bogart and White, Party in the Street, Free Show, followed by Death Killers, Death Rally, and 3D at BushwickBlockParty.com.
And welcome to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting from, as you heard in that last commercial, two shipping containers outside Roberta's Pizza, where there's an awesome block party going on today at 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So today's show is sponsored by Bushwick Block Party. I'm Carmen DeVito.
I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are the ladies of We Dig Plants and of Groundworks, Inc. We design and build gardens in New York and the surrounding area. And this show aims to bring the culture to horticulture. So right now it's raining in New York, and it's kind of yucky, but it made me nostalgic for my summer vacation. This summer, I drove cross-country from Manhattan, Kansas, to my ultimate destination, Los Angeles, specifically Venice Beach, on a kind of family road trip. It was going to be one of those trips where we did not plan on seeing any gardens, because my family's on to me now. I talk about historic houses, and they're like, you're bringing us on a garden tour, you know?
Oh, Mom.
Damn it. So it was going to be a garden tour-free vacation. So after nearly 2 weeks of traveling through Kansas and the Mojave and those endless, you know, barren landscapes, I really wasn't prepared for the horticultural envy that LA and Venice Beach would inspire in me. I was blown away. I was walking around Venice Beach in this kind of daze, snapping photos of one garden after another. And, you know, it became obvious to me that people really loved plants here, and they also really love good design.
And they surround themselves. It's really a way of life.
Yeah. And this design was so different from New York. It was free. It was liberating. It was so individual, I guess, the way that I could kind of describe it. It was not cookie cutter, or I have to have this, or I have to have that, you know. They didn't define gardens.
It wasn't, you know, a status symbol.
No, it wasn't. It was very, very personal. And of course, you know, they have awesome weather, and they took full advantage of it. And I thought to myself, well, I would put up with an occasional earthquake or a mudslide or a fire if I could have a papyrus hedge or an ancient agave in my front yard.
Sure.
You know? But beyond the great variety of plants was like they had this like amazing, like they were fearless in their use of color, and they were like whimsical with their paving and with the fencing, and they included art in their gardens, mm-hmm. and in a public way, not just like, oh, just, you know, just the right sculpture.
Not in a precious way. But
no, right. It felt very, very personal. When I walked around Venice Beach, you know, they had these sweet little bungalows, you know, $3 million bungalows, but they had front porches. You felt welcomed, like you could look in and you could participate in it. They had like parasols and fountains and like these living walls. It was like really very magical. I felt like I was in this like kind of Disneyland for gardens, but not in a bad way.
But not contrived.
No, not in a bad way. Right. You know, and palm trees overhead and everything. So we had amazing California weather, but of course, under the sort of pretense of a cloudy day that was too cold for swimming, we ended up at the Getty. And I ended up on the garden tour, which I wasn't.
Oh, Mom.
I know. I didn't force them to go, though. And I fell under the spell of the Getty. So today, we will be traveling vicariously to the West Coast and speaking with one of the creators of the Getty Garden in Los Angeles, Jim Dugan. Jim Dugan is a garden designer, a consultant, and a nurseryman, and he works, lucky him, in Southern California and the island of Maui, where he has a small nursery in each area. And in addition, he also works for the Getty Center, and his official title there is curatorial advisor for the Central Garden, and has been involved with the Central Garden since its inception in 1998. The artist Robert Irwin, some of you may know, conceived the Central Garden, and Jim was the plant side of Irwin's design, and I think the resultant garden is an amazing collaboration of their work. Now, Irwin is retired from the project, and the garden is in Jim's hands, and the Getty has also published Jim's book on the garden titled Plants in the Getty Central Garden. This is a story of the collaboration of artist and gardener and of Irwin's concept for the garden. And also, the book also talks about the plants and, you know, what plants are there and how to grow them. Jim, we're so pleased to have you on the show today.
Well, thanks for being interested in the Getty Gardens.
Yeah.
It took me 10 years to get there, but I finally got there. So,
Jim, you might...
gotten better over those 10 years, too, so...
Yeah.
Jim, you might hear some crazy music. There's a big block party going on behind us. So if you hear some music, we're having a big New York party over here.
Well, it sounds like fun.
Yeah. But let's talk about the gardens.
So in your essay, in your book, A Gardener Meets Artist, tell our audience a little bit how you met Robert Irwin. I thought that was a really interesting story, and how your various roles in the garden's creation sort of evolved.
Well, I lucked out. I had a small retail nursery, and one of the landscape architects, they actually live in San Diego, was a customer at the nursery, and visiting, they were talking about this project up in L.A. that they were doing this at the Getty Center, and this artist was selecting all of these unusual plants. And one of the first things they did was Bob had chosen a list of some 500 plants that he'd picked from books, you know, and visiting nurseries and gardens. And they asked me if I could obtain as many of those plants as possible, grow them at my nursery so Bob could come and watch them grow, because he's not a gardener. He doesn't know anything more than what he actually sees. If he sees a 1 gallon plant, I mean, that's it. He's looking at the
right.
Just 1 gallon plant.
He needs to know what it's going to turn into, the fall color, spring color, shape,
yeah.
Texture, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. So they started, now Bob and the landscape architect started coming to the nursery regularly, and Bob and I kind of hit it off right from the beginning. They would arrange plants in different groupings, and at first I kind of stood in the background, but Bob's always asking questions, and kind of the question he asks always is, where does this plant go from here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to give them a lot of give especially Bob a lot of information. So then the landscape architect started noticing that we're getting along really well together, and they're having a tough time a bit figuring out how to interpret Bob's artistic ideas.
Right.
So they asked me if I'd like to give it a try, and I went, well, let me check my schedule, you know. And
I don't know.
I lucked out, and it's been a really wonderful experience working with Bob and the audience that we have and the support of the Getty Center. It's been a real treat.
And you and Bob had something else in common too, didn't you, Jim?
Well, we're both dancers and swing dancers, and Bob is a fabulous Lindy dancer. In fact, just recently he was at the Getty. He doesn't come much, but I hadn't seen him for maybe 6 months there, and there was actually a girl who was setting up a Lindy or a swing dance get together, and knew Bob, and she went, hey Bob, you want to dance? And at first he went, no, you know, we're kind of busy. And then on the way back she said it again, and he went, so okay, yeah, let's do one. And so here he goes, and he just he was marvelous, you know.
That's great.
That's an amazing story, because he's something like 82 or 83 now, isn't he?
Right. He's in his early 80s, and he is still hot as a pistol, you know.
Yeah, so. I mean, he's one of the original kind of New York School Black Mountain College abstract painter guys.
He is. You know, I've been to dinner with him many times where he invites a lot of his artist friends, and the stories these guys tell and women tell is pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that really struck me about the essays in your book was Bob's quote of "change is in the air." I think because he wasn't a plants person and he wasn't a landscape architect per se, you know, he was really looking at this quote unquote discipline from a different discipline, which really has changed, I think, the face of how gardens are perceived and how they're welcomed. And I think you all did that so successfully at the Getty, that you've really changed the whole kind of forecast and industry of gardens.
You know, in your little introduction, you were talking about all of the individual styles out in Venice Beach and how people are willing to try just about anything, it seems. And well, I would hope that was part of our influence, is that, because we're certainly willing to try just about anything, because we're not trying to give you a rose garden or a, you know, an English cottage garden or a native plant garden. We're not, it's nothing like that at all. I mean, there's lots of wonderful plants, but we're really trying to convey, you know, Bob's view of perception and through an artistic way. And so that comes before the plants.
Yeah. Can you tell us one thing that also struck me was, I guess when you were speaking with the landscape architect as he approached you at your garden center, there was kind of some snickering about Bob wanted to plant a typical, I guess it was a miscanthus
or a penicetum.
Well, he was actually thinking of planting a Penicetum cetaceum, which is a really aggressive, weedy grass, although it's beautiful, you know, and so Bob, you know, he doesn't know any, he just says, hey, there's a really good-looking grass.
Yeah.
And we ended up doing a long study on grasses and chose many, many really great grasses and never really used this Penicetum, but even I, in the beginning, you know, went, oh, well, that's crazy, you know, I mean, what would it just know about anything?
But I love
but
that he was open to
willingness to look at things a new way is what was exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was different for you as well, wasn't it, Jim? Like you in the process, you thought about plants in a very fundamentally different way after working with Bob Irwin, right?
Oh, he certainly has changed me for the better, I think, as a plantsman. I mean, I know lots about plants, but he offers this wonderful new way of looking at things. I mean, for the hue of the color, the pattern in the leaf, or the texture and structure, and again, just really the willingness to not get stuck in any particular plant lover's mode, which we often do, and to try something else. I'm a plant nut anyway, so it wasn't that hard for me to get to try another plant.
So can you walk us through the garden virtually?
For those who haven't visited it yet, and everyone should.
The garden is really composed of two main parts, with maybe a third part too. The two main parts are what we call the stream garden and the bowl garden. And the stream garden is the first part that you're going to encounter, and it's basically a zigzag path. Materials that are chosen are just incredible. I mean, Corten steel, bronze railings, wonderful granites. Bob really chose wonderful materials. So that's the background, the setting that it's in. The stream garden is really a study of leaf, and any flower that's in it is just an extra. It's really not the goal of the stream garden.
Mm-hmm.
There are four sections in the stream garden, four different vignettes that Bob's trying to create. And then the bowl garden is a similar thing. There are four sections, but now the bowl garden is the flower garden. It's just an explosion of flowers where, you know, again, leaf is really what's important in the stream garden. The thing in the middle is what we call the plaza, and as you come off the stream, you enter a large flat area, DG. There's a waterfall that drops over an edge of red cornelian granite, again, beautiful material, into this circular bowl garden. And of course, the surprise that you find when you come down the stream and you come up to this waterfall edge is this floating azalea pool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's the maze-looking thing. It looks like
Not just maze-looking. It is an actual maze constructed planted with azaleas that appear to be floating in water. Now, the planters, of course, are waterproof, so they're not really in water, but they're certainly surrounded by water. And when those azaleas are going off, it's really, see.
And they're clipped so beautifully. It's not if people are visualizing an azalea,
these are karumi azaleas, which are, it's a smaller leafed one, really meant to be clipped, or really at least respond to clipping very, very well. And it's really our second group of azaleas that have been in there because we couldn't get the karumis the first time. They just weren't available, and we had to grow them on. But they're really, there's a red one, there's a pink one, and a white one. And the red one actually, in the wintertime, the leaf becomes very deep reddish bronze. And so you get not only the flower, but you get these contrasts of green and
a foliage,
too.
Right. So you're a garden designer and a garden builder, which is actually what Carmen and I are. And I know Carmen was fascinated to read about the process of staging and planting the garden. You had some huge challenges and some seriously uncooperative weather, right?
Well, when this is back in 1998 or so.
Right, when it was installed.
1997, when we were first installing the garden.
Uh-huh.
That winter was a big El Nino year. I mean, you know, the reports, they're always saying, oh, it's going to be El Nino year. Well, that year really was. I mean, the rain just came down in hellacious buckets, just one storm after the other. I have a memory where I'm the last one in the garden still willing to work because the weather is so bad, and I'm pulling my little nursery cart full of plants, literally leaning 45 degrees into the blowing wind. And
planting into mud, right.
Finally just give up the ghost and, you know, go back to the hotel.
Oh.
probably the second other really major thing that affected us is I had actually grown a great deal of the plants myself at my own nursery. We were collecting them for a really long time and taking cuttings and growing them on. And it was time to bring them up to the garden. And so we had a trucking company go down and pick up the plants. And I arrive one morning and the truck's there and we got all these guys to unload it, and I come up to the door and I open the doors to the truck and, oh my God, all the shelves in the truck had collapsed and crushed a year and a half's worth of work.
Yeah. That's the story that I remember, Jim, because I could feel your pain in that moment.
Yeah.
I could feel.
Jeez, that was, and this was a couple of weeks before opening. I mean, you couldn't go out and buy these plants again.
The pressure's on,
So some of the plants, they weren't killed, but they weren't, as we say, at retail quality today.
Yeah, right. They were not retail ready.
But somehow you got there. You got it done. Well, we have to take a little bit of a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking more with Jim Dugan of the Getty.
The sun may rise in the east, at least it's settled in a fire. It's understood that Hollywood sells Californication.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants, Heritage Radio Network. And we are on the show today talking with Jim Duggan from the Getty. So welcome back, Jim.
Yep.
And Carmen, talk more a little bit about what you observed at the Getty.
Sure. Well, I was there in the summertime, and in July, actually, and I observed that most of the visitors eventually gravitated to the Central Garden and down into the bowl. It was like this magnet, you know? It had this, like, magnetic attraction for people. And it, to me, it kind of felt like a kind of a shrine, you know? Jim, what do you think it is, like, that draws people to that? I mean, other than the flower color, you know?
You know, the Getty, just overall, is a visual feast. You know, you come up the tram, there's these wonderful buildings and covered in travertine, and it's a very large, expanding thing. But when you walk over towards the Central Garden, you look down and, wow, you know, it's like it glistens down there. It's attracting you, and I'm not quite sure why, but it certainly does. And of course, now people know about it too, and people come back many times to visit, to revisit. And so I think the attraction that there's a garden growing on down there, and that I have this thing about gardening, is the involvement that we put into it is so important, and I think people really respond to that, that they know it's not going to be the same thing every time. There's going to be something different.
Right.
Let's go down there and check it out.
Changes in the air, right.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to me, when I was in the introduction, when I was sort of comparing East and West Coast. Now, MoMA just redid their building, mm-hmm. right? Couple of years, and
Ken Smith, but the garden on the roof.
But it's not a real garden, Jim.
No.
It's all plastic, artificial plants and stone. Yeah. There is not a living thing on the MoMA roof.
Yeah, well, that's also, roof load was a big issue. So I think Ken did the best that he could, but that's why California is so much better.
speaking, wishful thinking.
Yeah.
But no, it just, to me, it represents an investment. Right now, Ken Smith's landscape on that roof, if you want to call it that, it has low maintenance, right? I mean, what?
There's no maintenance.
There's no maintenance or very little, right? But the Getty has a team of 8 gardeners or a dozen or more gardeners, Jim, isn't that right? Like, to keep it looking?
I wish we had that many gardeners. every day there's maybe 3 guys in the garden. You know, everyone's mm-hmm. suffered budget cuts over the years. And
right.
And of course, we have too. There are people in the garden working on the garden every day.
I saw some when I was there, you know, working.
And that's the difference that I think is. This is more my view rather than what Irwin came up with. But I have showed this difference between landscaping and gardening. And yes. This isn't a value judgment. It's not that one is better
or
worse.
Yeah.
No, but it's an important distinction.
The amount of activity that gets put into it that makes the garden different is that you have to be there. You have to be involved with it.
Yeah. Sing it, brother, sing. I hear you.
Well, we have to sing that. We have to tell our clients that all the time. Some clients want a garden, Jim, and some people want a landscape. And once, you know, that's a very important distinction. We try to explain to them the importance of maintenance. You cannot have a no-maintenance garden. It's just impossible. You can't have a no-maintenance landscape, for that matter. But if the clients we found that had the most successful gardens were the ones that understood that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to have a gardener to have a garden. It's just not going to work otherwise.
Yeah. But there's so many odes to garden history at the Getty. There's influences as broad as Villalante and Giverny and Asian gardens. So what do you think the Getty Garden adds to the history of garden design?
Well, you know, that's a tricky question, I suppose, and a difficult one. I think one thing that Bob and I would kind of like to convey is that it's really okay to use a plant for the moment. That you know, people go out and buy annuals by the truckloads, and they don't worry if they die because they know their annuals are going to go away. But, geez, you can really do that with all of your plants.
We use perennials as annuals a lot.
And don't be afraid to try something new. I mean, the books aren't always right. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Plant a new plant and be involved with your garden. That's really the success, is the longer you play with it, the better it's going to get.
Yeah, I also liked in your essay, you were talking about Bob's kind of perception of the garden as a painting, and that he kind of had a painterly approach to the garden, and that he would look for kind of kicker colors and contrasting colors to juxtapose one against the other.
Well, Bob is really the master of color. He has spent his whole life studying color.
Mm-hmm.
He did these paintings where he would be orange with an orange line on it, and he would just sit in front of the painting for days, you know, and he'd move the line a little bit, you know, and so he really understands color to a depth that is, well, way over almost everybody else's head. And so he brings that to the garden. You know, you take an area of, say, in the top of the garden in the stream is an area of gray plants. A gray is a very subtle color. Usually people maybe will use blues and whites and purples with it. But Bob will throw yellow in there, and he'll throw orange in there.
Right.
You know, it's a kicker color, and it really activates the gray. It turns it from this subtle color to a very active color.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about plants for a moment. Let's go a little bit more in depth with the plants in the Getty. What are some of the plants that you've fallen in love with while working on that garden that you can recommend to our listeners in any zone? I have a list of my favorites that I'm going to post, but I want to hear from you.
Well, I can offer some wonderful plants. I don't know about any zone because, unfortunately, for me or for you, I work only where it's warm.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, let's just say try it, you know?
Yeah, just treat it as an annual. Or
tell us your favorites and let gardeners
figure it
out.
You know, one of the ones that I stumbled on, is the Corsican hellebores, Helleborus argutifolius. It is also a variegated form. And for us, hellebores really don't do well, especially orientalis, the green-leafed varieties.
Mm-hmm.
The tips burn, and they don't last long. But the Corsican hellebore does really well in Southern California in warm climates. Just really, really, really nice. And it gives you these lime green flowers in the winter when nothing else is happening. And that was unusual for us. So that was a really good one. Another plant I really enjoy is Coleonema Sunset Gold, which is the golden breath of heaven. I mean, it's got a wonderful name, first of all. And it's a low-growing, heather-like plant with scented foliage, little pinkish-white flowers. Just a great accent color. I mean, I use it religiously. I really love it. Another group that you probably use them a lot, is the alliums.
Yes, we do.
We kind of got into that later on, and not from the beginning, but have totally fallen in love with the alliums. Allium schubertii and Allium christophii, which we call the exploding stars, are just really, really, really cool. Now, here we really need to stick them in the refrigerator, and when we get them, and chill them for a few weeks before we plant them out. But they're really just dramatic plants in the garden.
That's what my West Coast friends were saying when I was telling them about my horticultural envy coming to Southern California. They said, well, we can't grow peonies well, and we can't have lilacs. And I said, be quiet. You can have a lot more than we can.
See, we've gone to desperate measures as to grow things like peonies, you know, putting the whole plant in the refrigerator. And it doesn't really work.
Those are some big refrigerators.
No, we did it. I honest engine, you know. We had refrigerators, and we used them, and we put the peonies in there, but it still didn't work.
No.
Not well, at least.
Well, Bob was talking, you mentioned in your essays about the sensory experience, right? So the one thing that I observed is that you use society garlic, which isn't an allium, right? But you society garlic, which doesn't have a nice fragrance, all underplanted under the London Plains, right? Or the sycamores? I think they're London Plains.
Well, surrounding the ball garden are three rings of plants. The first lower one is Palankoi pumila, and then society garlic, which is Tulbagia, and then above that is a chondropetalum, which is a Cape reed. And all of these plants really had to be bulletproof plants because it's a mass planting. And if you started getting holes in it and things died off, well, that really wouldn't work too well. So it's one of the few places where I deliberately chose, or we chose, bulletproof plants. Now, society garlic is one of those, and there's a green-leafed form, and then there's a variegated-leafed form. We are using the variegated-leafed
form. It's beautiful, Jim.
It has purple flowers, but it does have this fragrance that
garlic.
Some people don't appreciate, you know? I mean, I've heard it a lot. People are going, what is that smell?
Yes.
And I go,
put your fangs away.
I actually enjoy it, you know. I don't mind it, but
it looks really great under the trees, actually, as an underplanting.
It's been a great plant, and I think it's also planted in all three of these rings are planted in radiating lines, and so there's a pattern to the planting. Especially, you don't see it so much in the Tulbagia now because it's an older planting, but. We're actually going to replace it in a year or two and get that line back to it. But so there's a lot of geometry in the garden. Bob's whole design is full of geometry, and even in the plant, in these rings themselves, they are planted in geometry.
Yeah, I saw that. In fact, well, I wanted to ask you, that was one of the questions was, what directions are you going? What new directions are you going with the plants and the landscape there? Because it's always changing and evolving, and you learn what works and what doesn't. What new things can we expect at the Getty if we visit now or in the future?
Well, you can always expect something new, first of all. I'm constantly out looking for new plants. I do three trips a year where I go out up and down the coast of California, sometimes farther, and look for new plants. And to me, it's really important to actually go to the nursery and look at the plant, because even though I know lots of things, I'll see something that I wasn't thinking about and went, whoa, that would work really good in this area.
Right.
And the challenge with any garden, of course, is that as it matures, well, the plants are getting bigger, you know, and what do you do with that? Do you just, sometimes a plant actually, for me, in the Getty garden, just has gotten too big. It doesn't fit the space that it was designed for. And it has to come out, and a younger one has to go in.
And you have acres. Imagine in New York. Yeah. We always are constantly shuffling things around, dividing. That's one of the biggest challenges.
Editing.
It looks sweet
constantly
and kind
editing.
Of good for the first few years, and then, you know, it just doesn't, you know, when the perennial is half the size of the tree, that's a problem, you know?
Yeah,
I think you know, I'm ruthless. If it's not working, it's gone.
Yeah, you have to be that way. It's a constant editorial job, actually.
Especially at the Getty, you know. I mean, like the beds in the bowl are 12 feet wide. They're not going to get bigger.
Right.
And so we have to deal with that space. And so it's a matter of pruning, of course, and dividing. But sometimes, well, no, the plant will have to go, and a new plant has to go in.
Right.
So I have a last important question for you, Jim. Do you take interns in the winter, you know, like light-starved New Yorkers who need to go to California and are willing to work?
Because you might get two
get
on your doorstep.
I do get asked that question, and unfortunately, that's out of my league.
Oh, okay, I just thought I'd ask.
We'd have to go to the head of grounds and ask that.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being our guest today and for shedding some light, West Coast light, into our gray New York days.
Yes.
Well, and it is a beautiful day here, too. I hate to rub it in, but it's nice today.
Good, good. We actually need the rain, so I'm actually kind of pleased that it's raining, but hopefully it'll stop tomorrow.
Well, hopefully the next time I come out west, I will stop by your nursery, Jim, and meet you in
Please
person.
Do.
Thank you. Thank you for being on. You've been listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We want to thank the good folks at the Bushwick Block Party. Today's show was produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. Please join us on our Facebook fan page, Groundworks Inc. We Dig Plants. We'd love your feedback. We're going to be posting a link to the Getty, of course, and to Jim's Nursery and some of our other West Coast favorites. Thanks for listening. See you in the garden.
Thank you.